Hello. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Let's start with an article from AARP, the magazine, and this one is about Ellen Burstyn, the actress on Alice, Grief, and the Importance of Kindness. I've changed my name 8 times. I was born Edna Ray Gillooly. My mother had 3 husbands by the time I was 7, so the name kept changing. After I got famous, I couldn't change it anymore. Too many names were flying around. She goes on to say, I was a child in World War II and remember collecting scrap metal and newspaper in my wagon for the war effort. We all pulled together. Whatever bad thing there is, there's the other side too. How people respond and don't get defeated by it. I know we're going to be okay. As a role model, the inspiration of my life is my acting teacher, Lee Strasberg. I was a mess from Detroit. Getting hired for my looks, I noticed that Marlon Brando, James Dean, and Kim Stanley, they knew something. I went to Lee, and he stripped me down to my essence. Us too. When I started out, everybody on set was a white man except the actress and the script girl. Slowly, they brought in women, black people, Asian people, gay people. 60 years later, women are producers, directors, and grips. The change is remarkable, but the real cultural change takes real effort and time. Oscar turn. During the 70s women's movement, female characters were either the loyal wife who stayed home while the husband saved the world, the prostitute with a heart of gold, or the victim who was raped and murdered. I said, no, I want to do a movie about the women I know. Alice doesn't live here anymore gave voice to women bringing up children alone, getting jobs, breaking glass ceilings. On lockdown, I stay indoors except for 1 hour a day when I walk in the park. I'm coping, but have dips. One day I had a sinking feeling of loneliness, and a frisbee landed near me. I handed it to a little girl who said, thank you, and my spirit lifted. I had made a connection with another human being. Kindness is really an important element of human interaction, you know? The Exorcist. I passed a group of people the other day, and a man said, Ellen Burstyn? I said, how can you recognize me with this mask on? He said, I've seen The Exorcist over 40 times. Your eyes are very familiar. And finally, staying spry. What are you willing to do or to give up to stay vital? I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I eat healthy and I exercise. I just got a new stationary bike. You have to do the things that will get you there. And this was as told to Natasha Stoyanov. Oscar, Emmy, and Tony Award-winning actress Ellen Burstyn is 88. She co-stars in Pieces of a Woman, which premiered on Netflix in January. And now some little short items on how to do Bluetooth. Some phones and tablets come without headphone jacks. Many new cars don't have CD players. It's time to embrace Bluetooth. Step 1. You activate Bluetooth. Speaker systems may have different processes for connecting, but making this happen is often simple. Turn on your device's Bluetooth and have them discover each other. For Apple, go to Settings, tap on Bluetooth. For Android, go to Settings, tap on Connections, then tap on Bluetooth. Step number 2, pair the devices. For Apple, under the My Devices or Other Devices heading, look for a listing for the new Bluetooth speakers you want to pair. Tap on that listing. For Android, tap on Scan. Below the Available Devices heading, you'll see a listing for the new Bluetooth speakers. tap on that listing. And finally, step 3, play your music. After this initial pairing, your music device and your speaker system should connect automatically. Then, any music you play on your phone, including through popular streaming apps such as Spotify or Pandora, will come through your wireless speakers. And this advice was by Jason R. Rich. Now for today, we're going to move on to a bit of financial advice from the Essential Retirement Guide. Withdrawal strategies. Sensible withdrawal strategies. Find an approach that works for your circumstances. For more than 2 decades, one of the most talked about ideas in retirement planning has been the so-called 4% rule. Devised by financial planner William Bingen as part of a 1994 study, this elegant rule was backed up by plenty of data. Bingen compared various withdrawal patterns against historical market returns going back to 1926. He found that a 4% withdrawal of one's starting balance, adjusted each year for inflation, was the largest withdrawal retirees could make while maintaining a steady shot at keeping their finances afloat for 30 years. But current trends, like increasing life expectancy, have been casting doubt on whether the 4% rule is the best way for today's retirees to keep from outliving their income during a longer retirement. As you consider how you'll make your savings last for the long haul, it's worth understanding the 4% rule, but it's also important to consider other income withdrawal strategies as well. The 4% rule explained, this guidance boils down the complex task of creating a sustainable retirement income stream to just one number and 3 steps. Withdrawal 4% of your total retirement assets as income in your first year of retirement. In year 2, increase last year's income by the rate of inflation and use that as your new yearly income amount. Repeat step 2 to fund each future year of your retirement. Imagine you enter retirement with a portfolio of $1 million. According to this rule, you should withdraw 4% of that balance, or $40,000, to use for expenses in your first year as a retiree. If inflation is 2.5% in a year 2, you would increase your yearly withdrawal by 2.5% to $41,000. That way, you'll have the same purchasing power as the previous year. If inflation clocks in at 3% in year 3, your withdrawal should go up to $42,230. That's 41,000 times 1.03. Since its introduction, the 4% rule has been embraced for its ease and specificity. But today, many experts are raising serious doubts about whether the 4% rule is still appropriate. Interest rates are very low by historical standards. That fact could spell trouble for retirees who depend heavily on yields from bonds and other fixed income investments. Couple that with the fact that retirements are extending as Americans' life expectancy is rising, and 4% may be too aggressive to ensure today's retirees won't outlive their savings. Other income withdrawal strategies. A flexible approach to withdrawals can provide an appropriate income level and help ensure that you don't outlive your savings. In recent years, retirement experts have devised alternative strategies that begin with a 5% withdrawal rate, then modify that figure based on market performance. By basing your retirement income partly on investment returns, you can rest assured you're not blowing through your savings and maybe afford to live a little longer in the process. There are 2 options to consider. The erase inflation method. This one keeps it simple. All you do is skip inflation adjustment after any year in which your retirement investments decline in value. Let's say during your first year of retirement, inflation is 2.5%, but a down year in the stock market trims 6% off your retirement balance. Under the 4% rule, you would ignore the 6% loss and increase next year's withdrawal 2.5% to follow inflation. But with the erase inflation method, the 6% loss means you leave your income level constant for the year, as if inflation were 0%. This method effectively lowers the purchasing power of your retirement income as a consequence of a downturn market years. It also affords you a little more income in your early retirement years than the 4% rule, as experts found a starting withdrawal rate of 5% consistently succeeds over a 30-year span. The guardrail method. Like the erase inflation method, the guardrail method also has you start withdrawals at 5% and forego inflation increases in down years. However, the guardrail method adds another market-dependent layer to the equation, ensuring that your withdrawals stay between a guardrail of 4 to 6% of your total retirement savings. If your previous year's withdrawal represents more than 6% of your total savings, you would reduce your withdrawal amount by 10% this year to get back on course. Meanwhile, if the previous year's withdrawal represents less than 4% of your total savings, you would increase your withdrawal by 10% this year. Any year your withdrawal falls within 4% and 6%, all you have to do is check whether your investments generated a positive return and adjust your numbers for inflation if they did. For example, say you enter retirement with $1,500,000, giving you $75,000 in your first year based on a 5% withdrawal rate. Each year after that, determine what percentage of your total portfolio your withdrawal represents. After 2 years, say you have taken a total of $150,000, that's 75,000 times two, out of your portfolio, your remaining balance is $1,350,000. Imagine the market dives at the same time, pulling your balance down to $1,200,000. At this point, your $75,000 withdrawal would represent 6.25% of your total savings, above the 6% cap specified by the guardrail method. As a result, you should lower your withdrawal by 10%, or $7,500, and take out only $65,500 over the next year. The flip side of this method is that you can give yourself a 10% raise in any year in which the ratio falls below 4%, giving you a nice boost in cash flow during years when the stock market grows your nest egg enough. And the pro tip here is to plan to reassess your goals and lifestyle at least annually in retirement and shift your withdrawal strategy accordingly. Now let's look at another article from AARP, the magazine. This one is pretty long, so I'll probably read it in pieces. Healthy You, a balancing act. Three moves to help restore your balance and keep you on your feet. If you've been rendered less active by the pandemic, you can probably see and feel the changes in your body. 36% of Americans report they've put on weight during the COVID-19 crisis, an average of 12.5 pounds, according to a survey by WW, formerly Weight Watchers. You may also notice you're not quite as strong as you were. Sedentary living can accelerate age-related muscle loss. And with more weight and weaker muscles comes another bodily change, a loss of balance. Balance is an often neglected aspect of health. Falls are the second biggest cause of accidental death after traffic accidents, the World Health Organization reports. So, as life, hopefully, begins to return to normal over the coming months, be extra careful as you re-engage with your regular routine. These simple moves will improve your overall coordination and strength and keep you on your feet. Single leg stand. Step 1. Stand behind a chair or facing a kitchen counter, keeping both feet on the floor, hip-width apart, hold on to the chair for stability. Step 2. Raise your leg behind you. Next, this shows you keeping your knees together, but your foot lifted off the floor. Next, let go of the chair and stay balanced in this position for between 10 and 15 seconds. Step 3, lower your leg, then grab the chair again and repeat the exercise using the opposite leg. As your balance improves, make the drill more challenging by closing your eyes while you balance. And also, it helps if when you lift your leg, you shift your weight. Toe stand. Step 1. Stand on the lowest step of a set of stairs and hold on to the railing. Step 2. Place your weight on the balls of your feet and let your heels hang off the step. Slowly push up as far as you can onto the balls of your feet while counting to 4. Pause, then count to 4 as you lower your heels until they're slightly below the step. Pause. Repeat the entire sequence 20 times. Heel-toe walk. Step 1. Stand beside a wall or kitchen counter, close enough so you can touch it to help you with balance. Lift the foot that's farther from the counter or wall and place it directly in front of your other foot, so your forward foot's heel barely touches your back foot's toes. Balance this way without moving. Step 2. When you feel comfortable, try walking forward slowly, heel to toe, heel to toe. When you reach the end of the wall or the counter, turn around and walk back on the same way. Once this becomes easy, try walking backward in a reverse toe-to-heel pattern. Now let's look at the 12 worst ways you can hurt your heart today. Even if you live a healthy lifestyle, you've probably just made at least one of these common mistakes. After a year of face masks and FaceTime, you may feel that you've been a solid soldier in the battle to stay healthy. But even if you've out-fauci'd the strictest of health experts to fight the coronavirus, you may still be at an elevated risk of a disease that's actually more deadly than COVID-19. Cardiovascular disease, CVD, which includes heart attack, stroke, and other ailments related to your heart and circulation, claims more than 800,000 lives each year, more than double the 2020 COVID-19 death toll. It is the number one killer of men and women in every ethnic and racial group. And, according to the American Heart Association, nearly half of all U.S. adults have some form of CVD. Even if you strive to live a healthy, heart-healthy lifestyle, you may have some routine habits, things you probably did today, in fact, that are undermining your best efforts. For example, 1, you use an alarm clock to wake up. Bachman Turner Overdrive's hit song of Taking Care of Business has been warning us about this since 1973, but doctors have lately come to agree. Sleeping too little can take a toll on your heart. When researchers followed subjects for 7 years, they found that participants who slept less than 6 hours a night had a 20% greater risk of heart attack over the course of the study. If you wake up every morning to your alarm clock's warning, take that as your body's signal that you're not getting enough sleep, says Donald Blywise, a professor of neurology at Emory University School of Medicine. The National Sleep Foundation advises getting between 7 and 9 hours at night, but your individual needs may vary. A good barometer that you're not sleeping enough, Blywise notes, is how you feel. If you are tired all day and not sleeping well at night, you should speak with your physician. He recommends following a consistent sleep schedule, trying not to vary your bedtime more than 30 minutes a night. 2, you stir creamer into your coffee. Is coffee good for your heart or bad for it? It's still unclear. For every coffee is good for you study, there seems to be a coffee is bad for you study, says Jennifer Haith, MD, an associate professor of medicine in the Center for Advanced Cardiac Care at Columbia University, Irving Medical Center. She tells patients to stick to 1 to 3 cups a day, which may have some benefits. One study associated a moderate consumption of coffee with a lower risk of heart disease in women. But it's not the coffee that cardiologists are concerned about, it's what you're putting into it. You already know that sugar is a bad way to start your day, but non-dairy coffee creamers may be even worse for you, according to Megan Wong, a registered dietitian in Vancouver, British Columbia. That's because non-dairy creamers can be a significant source of heart-damaging trans fats. Thanks to labeling laws, even creamers labeled zero trans fats can have up to 0.5 gram of this poisonous fat per serving. That adds up if you drink several cups daily. Trans fats increase levels of unhealthy LDL cholesterol and decrease levels of healthy HDL cholesterol, Wong explains. If you don't take your coffee black, use real dairy creamers with a bias toward less fat, meaning that 1% milk is healthier than half and half. Even better, try evaporated skim milk, says Haith, who also suggests substituting almond or soy milk as an alternative to dairy variations. 3. Count walking around the office as exercise, or you do this. You already know that sitting all day long puts you at a greater risk of heart disease. And yes, it's better to have a job in which you're on your feet often, or you work at a stand-up desk if one is available. But not sitting is not the same as exercising, says Joseph Carrozza, MD, Chief of Cardiovascular Medicine at St. Elizabeth's Medical Center in Brighton, Massachusetts. You've got to do it for 20 minutes, not stopping and starting, because what you want to do is get your heart rate up, he says. And it's very hard to get your heart rate up if you're just walking across the room. Though it's wonderful to be active at work, don't forget to build at least 150 minutes of real exercise into your week. Number 4. You let another day go by without a flu shot. The flu puts stress on the heart, notes Warren S. Levy, MD, a cardiologist and the president and chief medical officer of Virginia Heart. If you have underlying heart disease, it may be particularly crucial that you get an annual vaccine to prevent an unnecessary infection. According to one recent study, people were 6 times more likely to suffer a heart attack within 1 week of getting the flu. A larger study showed that 1 in 8 patients hospitalized with the flu suffered an acute CVD event. Number 5, your drink of choice is diet soda. Because it has 0 calories, diet soda can give the illusion of being a healthy alternative. But so much more goes into health than just caloric intake, stresses Suzanne Steinbaum, MD, a cardiologist in private practice in New York City. A report from the multi-ethnic study of atherosclerosis found that people who drank diet soda daily had a 36% greater risk of developing metabolic syndrome and a 67% greater risk of developing diabetes. Both of these conditions significantly raise the odds of having a stroke or heart attack. Try swapping out diet or regular soda for sparkling water with lime as the way to get your daily bubbly fix. Well, since we're not going to get through all of these today, let me go to a sidebar article, Too Much of a Good Thing. Get more of these, but not too much more. Sleep. This is like a recap. A 2019 study found that participants who regularly slept for 9 hours or more hours had a 34% higher incidence of heart disease. Sleeping for that duration may signify an underlying condition such as sleep apnea, which may increase the risk of CVD. Exercise. Don't worry, you're probably not in danger of overdoing it, even if you're a fitness buff. But in a study of middle-aged men, those who exercised intensely for more than 450 minutes a week were 27% more likely to develop calcium buildups in their coronary arteries. Peanut butter. It's a great source of protein, fiber, and heart-healthy monounsaturated fats. But a tablespoon has nearly 100 calories, and many peanut butter have added sugar. Guacamole is another heart-healthy food that contains less than healthy fillers. A friend of mine in Canada sent me this little note. I would never have believed that a few weeks of uncut hair could weigh 20 pounds, but that's what the scale says. Now, for our last few minutes today, let's look at the TV shows that changed America, and we have time for a few of them. At its best, a show doesn't just entertain. It opens eyes, sparks conversation, stirs the pot, makes us reflect. Inspired by the 50th anniversary this year of the groundbreaking All in the Family, AARP's media critic Tom Appello makes his picks of the TV series that have had the greatest influence on our collective culture and, by extension, on each of us. Barrier-breaking sitcoms. All in the Family, 1971 to 79. Liberals and conservatives alike loved Archie Bunker's un-PC malapropisms. The show, which was unlike any other up to its time, openly tackled subjects such as Vietnam, infidelity, race relations, homosexuality, women's liberation, and menopause. The Golden Girls, 1985 to 1992. What? Four single women over 50, and they're having the time of their lives? Every belly laugh struck a blow for the dignity of aging. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, 1990 to 96, featuring Will Smith. It was one of the first shows where black kids could see a Malcolm X poster like the one on their own bedroom wall. Will and Grace, 1998 to 2006 and 2017 to 20, an indelible portrait of true friendship. This show offered primetime TV's first gay lead character. Ugly Betty, 2006 to 2010. Telenovelas long ruled Latin American TV, and this adaptation of Colombian soap Yo Soy Betty La Fea, starring America Ferrera, was the first to conquer American hearts and funny bones. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.